Persons listening to this show should experience varying degrees of euphoria and might radiate a warm glow of truth from their entire being. This phenomenon sometimes lasts hours after a typical brain massage. If you are listening with another lights on listener and they begin to glow, don't be concerned. This is a phenomenon normally associated with Pastor Scheidbach's patented brain massage technique and merely means the truth has set them free. Be advised, for Pastor Scheidbach, exposing liberal lies and destroying vain philosophies of God-hating, America-despising liberals is like taking candy from a baby. All liberals are hereby cautioned. Pastor Scheidbach is about to rip one or more of your favorite lollipop notions right out of your hand. Uh-oh, too late. A liberal just lost a lollipop. Stand by. Five, the Brain four, Massage Show three, is about to blow your mind.
Hello, I'm Jerry Scheidbach, pastor at the Lighthouse and your brain masseur. Nepal. How very sad. We're praying for the victims of that terrible tragedy. Baltimore. Oh, my. Here we go again. But I'm going to focus today on this issue of same-sex marriage that is in front of the Supreme Court. Oral arguments were heard April 28th, and now the court is deliberating the matter between them. So in segment one, I want to talk about what I think our candidates ought to do about this issue, no matter how the court rules. And in segment two, I'll offer my comments on statements made by key members of the Supreme Court during oral arguments that will give us our first peek into the inclination of the court. Now, please hold on through this short announcement from our key sponsor, the Lighthouse Baptist Church.
How would you like to encounter God in 2015? Are you ready for a renewed experience of God with a fresh encounter this year? Or maybe you've never experienced God and He doesn't seem real to you. Get ready to encounter God and know that He is real.
Okay, folks, get ready for your brain massage.
Truth served here, flavored with delectable wit, succulent sagacity, luscious logic, a gourmet meal for the mind.
On Sunday night, 6 p.m., by the way, I generally preach a message in which I apply biblical precepts and principles to the issues of interest to all God-fearing patriots. It's called the Issachar Report. Last Sunday night, I delivered a message titled Prophetic Implications of This Election, with an eye on how the war over marriage is shaping up. Now, folks, we have some very important issues to address in this election, and it is going to be a challenge to keep the race focused on these truly serious and important issues. Middle East policy, for example, specifically with regard to ISIS and Iran's interest in obtaining a nuclear bomb. I mean, the rise of ISIS signals a shift from independent terrorist organizations operating in the shadow governments of Iran, Pakistan, and Saudi Arabia to a national terrorist army. The people of Iran are out there chanting death to America, while our president is attempting to make a deal with them that informed experts say is bad for Israel and America. And as we know, the devil is in the details, and Obama's pulling an Obamacare on us, not letting us see the details and manipulating the system to circumvent the constitutional role of Congress. Congress must insist that the full agreement be made public and that all the details must be put on the table. No secret deals with Iran. I suppose you heard about the Obama-approved drone strike on an al-Qaeda hideout in Pakistan that killed Weinstein, an American Jew held captive by al-Qaeda. Oh, and that the FBI was participating in paying ransom for his release. And Obama claims this is standard policy for America. You know, this business of paying ransom demands of terrorists? Excuse me? Trading terrorists for deserters like Bergdahl, you know, like Washington and Lincoln did? Excuse me? I mean, I'm not even going to go there. The ignorance of American history displayed so often with this president is truly shameful. But even if we ignore your woeful ignorance of our history, Mr. President alleged, we don't usually pay the ransom and then kill the hostage, do we? Do you suppose al-Qaeda set him up on that one? And the point I'm making is that the current race for the White House is critical with regard to defining America's future role in the shaping of the future of the Middle East. Now, we know what the scriptures say about the future of the Middle East. The question is whether America will be on the side of the spirit of Jesus Christ or on the side of the spirit of Antichrist. And under Obama, it's clear we are being positioned on the side of the Antichrist. I mean, consider foreign policy regarding how we respond to the persecution of Christians around the world is certainly presently on the side of the enemy. The enemies of Christ, I should say. This president would negotiate deals favorable to countries that chant death to America and who are known to be involved in supporting the killing of Christians for the crime of being a... How many American hostages does Iran now hold? Friend, not one dime to any country that persecutes Christians. Listen, Jesus is coming. He's the king, and the king shall answer and say unto them, Verily I say unto you, inasmuch as ye have done it unto the least of these my brethren, ye have done it unto me. Then shall he answer them, saying, Verily I say unto you, inasmuch as ye did it not unto the least of these, ye did it not unto me. Now I want you to think about that. We're going to be held to account as a nation for how we respond to this business of crucifying Christians and doing that sort of thing and beheading them and so on just because they're Christian. Now today, and that's Friday, I heard about Diana Momika, an Iraqi nun who was invited to testify before Congress. Now folks, I understand that with regard to what it is to be a Christian, I've defined that very clearly. And one must repent and believe on Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior. And one isn't made a Christian by the Catholic Church or anybody's baptism. I get that, but we use the word Christian in a nominal way to identify those as opposed to who are Muslims and all these other religions, okay? So bear with me. But today, Friday, I heard about Diana Momika, an Iraqi nun who was invited to testify before Congress about the persecution of Christians at the hands of ISIS, and the State Department denied her visa. Now, whether or not you are a Catholic, you should be very concerned about this. And according to www.state.gov/secretary, the State Department is run by the Secretary of State of the United States, and that is currently John Kerry. And from this website, we have a statement that defines what the Secretary is responsible to do. And it says in part, quote, the Secretary carries out the President's foreign policies, end quote. Did you hear that? The Secretary carries out the President's foreign policies. So when Hilarity launched the movie Made Him Do It Lie, it was service to Obama's policies. Obama's State Department is following the policies of Obama regarding this nun. Particularly interesting is the fact that this nun was a part of a group of delegates who were invited to come over, and all the other delegates got their visas. Representatives of the Yazidis, I guess that's how you pronounce it, and representatives of the Turkmen Shia, which is a Muslim group, were given their visas to come and testify before Congress about the persecution they're suffering at the hands of ISIS. Why not this Catholic nun? The State Department called her a liar, basically. They said she failed to, quote, demonstrate that her intended activities in the United States would be consistent with the classification of the visa, end quote. Now, I've traveled enough to know that's just bogus. She reported that she was told to her face by Officer Christopher Patch that, quote, she was denied because she is classified as an IDP, which is to say she's an internally displaced person. And what that means is she has no permanent residence anywhere. She's been displaced, which, according to Obama's State Department and according to his policies, makes her a risk because she might be secretly plotting to use this visa to get into the United States and stay here. Can you believe that? I mean, really, can you believe these people? How many millions are here illegally right now? And Obama's openly stated policy is that he wants to make them all legal. 11 million and counting every day? What? He refuses a visa to this persecuted nun because he's afraid she's going to come over here and overstay her visa? God forbid! Is this man out of his mind? You know, really, I can't believe he is so blatantly and openly pro-ISIS and anti-Catholic or Christophobic or just mean-spirited and resentful against the Catholics because what? Because they don't support his bloodlust for innocent babies butchered in a woman's womb? His open disregard for Christian sentiment and Christian rights of conscience set over against his politically motivated sympathies for illegal aliens and his perverted sympathies for the LGBT crowd, you know, one breaking our immigration laws, the other breaking the laws of nature and of nature's God. I mean, it's beyond words. Compare it to his relative disregard for these Christians in Iraq who are being crucified, beheaded, driven from their homes, and he just goes and plays golf. Okay, put this together. Obama refuses to allow a nun to come to America to give eyewitness testimony to the wholesale slaughter of Christians by ISIS on the suspicion that she might have a secret plan to stay here. Really? I guess those crossing our borders every day might have a secret plan to stay here, too, you think? Oh, and wait, that's right. They didn't apply for a visa. So that's what's different here. Unbelievable. Or is the difference that Iran and Iraq and ISIS might get offended if we allow a Christian to come here and tell us what they're doing to Christians over there? Or is it because Obama is trying to keep this from becoming a, quote, Christian versus Muslim thing? Yeah. You know, hey, the people who are making this a, well, Muslim versus Christian thing are the Muslims over there targeting Christians for massacre, and the Muslims over here spending all their time accusing Christians of persecuting them here. Can you believe this? Enough already. Matthew Balin, or Balan, in an article he wrote for Newsbusters, points out, While Obama is refusing a visa to a persecuted nun, he has recently created a, quote, special envoy for the human rights of LGBT persons, end quote. Someone to represent the persecuted homosexuals over there. From the State Department announcement regarding the creation of this special envoy, we read, quote, "We're building our capacity to respond rapidly to violence against LGBT persons," end quote. Oh, man. You see what I mean? That this man's sympathies are perverse. He would passionately and aggressively take action to build up so we can respond rapidly to LGBT persons who suffer violence, but then virtually ignore what's going on in Iraq against Christians right now and go so far as to deny a visa to someone who desires to come and bear truthful witness to it. And the point at present is that this election needs to be a referendum on this kind of nonsense. The next president needs to be a Christian who will be a Christian and care about the liberties of every man, woman, and child in or out of the womb, too. And then economic policy, particularly with regard to the Federal Reserve propping up the American economy at home, and the role of the IMF in propping up American currency abroad. This gets real heady, but the Band-Aid called quantitative easing that is covering the gaping wound in our economy caused by Obamanomics, and I say that because he increased the national debt in his tenure by 50%, is going to fail at some time, and when inflation is let loose, it threatens to devour Americans' savings and equity. I'm studying this very deeply at present. We'll get back to you on what I find when I'm done. But this idea of hilarity, taking up a pitchfork and leading her hoi polloi, which is what she really thinks of us commoners, who like her, carry their own luggage and ride coach, to rally behind her and storm the mansions and topple the 1%, is a wicked, lying, demagogic ploy where she and Bill and Soros and others of their ilk who contribute to her would be accepted, you bet, and the rest destroyed. Besides, even if that approach did eliminate our debt, I mean, the top wealthiest 1% of American households would be, what, about 1.7 million households. And if you stole $13.6 million from each of them, you would still not cover the entire national deficit because the numbers they're using don't even include the unfunded liabilities. And besides all that, it would destroy property rights for everyone, because if they can steal from the rich, my friend, they can steal from you too, buddy. Theft is wrong, and I've got to go to a break. But here's the point. We have huge issues to address in this election. Obama has taken a wrecking ball to our Constitution, our foreign policy, our economy, and even our military readiness. He has overwhelmed us, throwing open so many scandal gates, it's a wonder any president can hope to lead with any integrity left in government at all. Bergdahl Gate, Fast and Furious Gate, Benghazi Gate, Race Gate. Oh, my soul. What this man has done to race relations in this country is unconscionable. But the left will attempt to focus this election on the gay agenda, or on hilarity's political antics and constant scandals and the so-called war on women or so-called war on blacks. I think the homosexual agenda is a critical issue on a social level and a spiritual level. And if we take the devil's side on this one, it will certainly set our course for hell. But what can possibly be more ridiculous than that? In the face of all we face, we're being forced by a 3% minority, and really even a smaller group than that, because while it is generally agreed homosexuals make up about 3% of the population, not all homosexuals are so ridiculous that they want to change a millennia-old definition of the cornerstone institution to all society since Adam awoke in the likeness of his creator. It is absurd that this little bullying crowd has been able to force the entire nation into a conversation about whether marriage should be redefined. They've bullied into silence all those who might tell the truth about this disease-ridden lifestyle and the lawlessness that is at the heart of it, especially their hatred toward Christians that is in that culture, bedded deeply in it. The fact that they have little regard for anyone's rights but their own. Their self-centered blindness is overwhelming. They're bullying. They're terrorizing penchant for pushing themselves onto their neighbors. Not all of these homosexuals are like this, by the way. I understand that. But I'll tell you what, that core group of pushing all of this is just like that crowd in Sodom. And as I've said so many times already, yielding to the idea of homosexual special rights necessarily leads to the destruction of the rights of everyone else. Now, my warning to conservatives is that you're going to be forced to address this issue. Rubio was already baited into this and got clobbered. In my mind, and in the mind of many I've talked to, he's become a non-contender already. The majority of conservative voters will dismiss him as a serious candidate. And listen, not only because he caved on the question of whether gays are born that way, but because of his absurd, equivocating response to this question. So how should we respond? Well, my friend, first, I think you should attempt to avoid allowing them to make that question define you as a candidate. I would challenge them with something to the effect of, do you really think that is the question of this election? I would ask them directly, are you attempting to define my candidacy by that question? I wonder about you guys in the media. If you want to talk about the homosexual agenda, I'm happy to oblige, but I doubt you'll listen to my answer. But in any event, I wonder if that is what my fellow Americans are really interested in knowing about me right now. I mean, really. Do you think Americans are out there thinking, what does Jerry think about homosexuals? Or do you suppose they might be concerned about what I'm going to do about ISIS, what I'm going to do about Iran getting a nuclear bomb, about Israel's situation, about the genocide being perpetrated by ISIS against Christians and everyone else who refuses to bow the knee to Mecca? Or how about the economy? Do you suppose Americans might want to know whether I'm going to join Hillary and target the so-called 1% to confiscate the wealth of Americans and redistribute it to themselves and then throw a few bones out to their hoi polloi? Or will I stimulate the economy not by running the printing presses, but by unleashing the mighty economic power of this great country? For example, whether I would support the pipeline or oppose it, whether I would continue the attack on the coal industry or encourage the continuation of finding ways to take advantage of our vast coal reserves in as responsible a fashion as is possible. Aren't these really the questions most Americans are particularly concerned about? Rather than this ginned up business about this argument we're having over something so absurd as whether gays should have the right to force all the rest of us to redefine the word marriage? But if you want my take on that question, I'm glad to oblige. When I was a toddler, my parents gave me one of those boards, you know, with different shaped holes cut out of it, square, circle, star, triangle, so on, rectangle, with pieces that matched each of the holes, and the job was to match the shape of the object to the hole in the board. I'm told that I was particularly astute at making correct matches. I'm also told that some kids are not so quick to figure that out. So natural intelligence tells me, and the vast majority of reasonable people, that homosexuality is a mismatch, and apparently nature agrees with that simple observation because look at all the diseases that accompany their behavior. And besides all that, I continue to believe all men were created equal and endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, and that this creator made man, male and female created he them, and our creator ordained that these two come together to become one, that is, male and female. Our creator said, the one that endowed to us our inalienable rights. He said that homosexuality is an abomination and nature abhors it as an anomaly. And that's what I think of homosexuality. As for whether we should change a millennia-old definition of marriage to accommodate this bizarre behavior is just plain silly. That's my take on it. What's yours? And they say, well, what I think on the subject is not the point. And I say, oh, really? Are you avoiding the question? Why would you avoid the question? You suppose that those who vote for or against me might consider that a compelling reason motivating their vote, right? Well, maybe people would like to know what you think about it so they can decide whether they want to read your articles or listen to your broadcast. Eh? I've gone over my time. I'll be right back with some encouraging glimpses into the thinking of the court on this important subject, and you'll see that some of the jurists, at least, are showing ability to see through the nonsense. I'll be right back. By the way, how'd you do with the shapes game?
Encounter God. The word encounter means to meet, to experience, to come face to face, to confront. Many encounters are routine happenstances, but even these can have a major impact on our lives. I'm sure each of you listening to this can think of encounters that made a difference in your life. But the greatest life-changing encounter in any life will be those encounters with God that make a difference. Perhaps you've encountered God in the past, but it's been a while since you experienced God in a vital, meaningful encounter. Renew your experience of God with a fresh encounter this year that will impact your life for spiritual growth. Perhaps you've never experienced God, and He doesn't seem real to you. You can encounter God in 2015, and when you do, your life will take on new meaning and purpose, and you'll know that God is real. Lighthouse Baptist Church, 1310 West Bedarabia Road, Santa Maria. Go to santamarialighthouse.org. Pastor Scheidbach's series of messages, Encounter God, are delivered Sunday mornings at the Lighthouse. Go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com for an archive of great brain massage shows that you can download and distribute to others free of charge. If you want to give us a gift to help with broadcasting costs, go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com and click on the donate button, or mail it to Post Office Box 2803, Santa Maria, California, 93457. Satan is called the dragon and prince of the power of the air. The devil beware. Pastor Scheibach is on the air, swinging the sword of truth at the dragons of deceit, thrusting the blade of incisive insight into the belly of liberal lies, lies that blind man's mind in darkness. He wants to know if you have his back. Go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com and make your donation today, or mail it to Post Office Box 2803, Santa Maria, California, 93457. How would you like to encounter God in 2015? Are you ready for a renewed experience of God with a fresh encounter this year? Or maybe you've never experienced God and he doesn't seem real to you. Get ready to encounter God and know that he is real. Stand by. Five, the Brain four, Massage Show three, is about two, to blow your mind.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Jerry Scheibach, pastor at the Lighthouse, and your brain masseur, and Paul Revere's lantern lighter, lighting the lamps in the church belfry arch, singing the enemies on the march, an enemy that would steal from us our liberties. I went long in segment one. I'll have to abbreviate some of my commentary on statements made by justices on the Supreme Court as they heard an oral argument in the same-sex marriage case. Ryan T. Andrews, writing for the Daily Signal, presents what I thought was an excellent glimpse into the thinking of key justices on the Supreme Court as they responded to arguments and asked questions and so on during oral arguments. And I'm going to excerpt statements made by these justices that I find presented in this report, and I'll offer some comments along the way. So thank you, Mr. Andrews, and now from the Daily Signal. On the question, what is marriage? Justice Anthony Kennedy pointed out that thinking marriage is the union of a man and a woman has been with us for millennia, and it's very difficult for the court to say, oh, well, we know better. Chief Justice John Roberts noted that every definition that I looked up prior to about a dozen years ago defined marriage as unity between a man and a woman as husband and wife. So he pointed out, you're not seeking to join the institution, you're seeking to change what the institution is. The fundamental core of the institution is the opposite sex relationship, and you want to introduce into it a same-sex relationship. Twice during an oral argument, Justice Antonin Scalia pointed out that there wasn't any society prior to the Netherlands in 2001 that permitted same-sex marriage. Kennedy also seemed reluctant to judicially redefine marriage. He pointed out that redefining marriage to include same-sex relationships has only been around for 10 years, whereas marriage, as presently understood, has been around for millennia. He said something to the effect, I don't even know how to count the decimals when we talk about millennia. Justice Stephen Breyer, one of the liberals on the court, likewise noted that marriage understood as the union of a man and a woman has been the law everywhere for thousands of years among people who were not discriminating against gay people. And suddenly you want nine people outside the ballot box to require states that don't want to do it to change what marriage is. Justice Samuel Alito joined in, pointing out a near universal historical consensus about what marriage is, and asked if the lawyer was seriously going to argue it resulted only because of anti-gay sentiment. Alito asked, how do you account for the fact that, as far as I'm aware, until the end of the 20th century, there never was a nation or a culture that recognized marriage between two people of the same sex, and so on? Effectively, he's saying, surely you're not trying to argue that all of those societies and cultures define marriage as a statement of animosity against homosexuals. Anyway, Roberts highlights another important clarification. What petitioners are arguing for, he says, in this case, is not freedom from government, but government affirmation. He explained that in a previous Supreme Court case, the whole argument was that the state cannot intrude on that personal relationship. But now people are suing, saying that the state must sanction, it must approve that relationship. And these are two different questions. That's a good point. On the question of whether democracy should be allowed to work out marriage policy, the jurists seem to be thinking in our direction. Roberts noted that a court-imposed 50-state solution would not lead to civil peace, but to anger and resentment. If the court unilaterally redefined marriage, there will be no more debate, he said. Now, I disagree with that. We're going to go on debating this matter. But what he's saying is, he means that with regard to the government's actions in enforcing law, there would be no room for debate on the questions involved in this controversy. Everyone would be forced to comply under law. And on this point, listen, currently, laws recognize the socially, spiritually, religiously, and biologically driven definition of marriage as, listen, it has existed for millennia, even before man made any laws about it. And the point is, the laws we have in the books now are a recognition of a social institution. not a creation of it. Now these characters are coming along and asking the court to define marriage, to create a kind of institution, or to mess with one that's been in place for millennia, and to do it by legal fiat. So instead of laws created on the basis of a definition of marriage that arose out of nature, these homosexuals want to get the jurists to play God, to define this natural institution in a way that is contrary to nature. Regarding the consequences of redefining marriage on persons with religious objections to homosexual marriage, the Obama administration Solicitor General, Donald Verrilli, admitted to the court that religious schools that affirm marriage as the union of a man and a woman may lose their nonprofit tax-exempt status if marriage is redefined. When Alito asked Verrilli whether a religious school that believed marriage was the union of a husband and wife would lose their nonprofit status, Obama's lawyer, arguing for the homosexual activists that want to change the meaning of marriage, said, quote, "It's certainly going to be an issue. I don't deny that. I don't deny that, Justice Alito. It is going to be an issue," end quote. You see, Obama and Hillary, who recently said Christians were just going to have to change their views about these things, they despise Christians who oppose same-sex marriage, and they will signal out and punish anyone who objects to it. You watch. Mark my words on this. Take a look at what Oregon is doing to that couple who refused to bake a cake for a homosexual wedding. This is outright political religious persecution. Oregon laid a $130-some-odd-thousand fine on this Christian couple, and when someone on their behalf set up a site for people to respond with donations to help them, well, they received over $100,000 in a few days, and then the state gets word of that. And they required that site be taken down. That is so wrong. This is outrageous. I've been telling you that is where this will necessarily go. Remember, several shows have been devoted to this warning. The homosexual activists are aggressive bullies who will force their views on you. It will not be enough that you leave them alone. They are going to force you to affirm them. The sodomites are at the gate. On the question of what are we opening ourselves up to if we redefine marriage to include same-sex couples, again, the court sent reassuring signals. Justice Alito asked, what if, quote, a group consisting of two men and two women apply for a marriage license? Would there be any ground for denying them a license, end quote? And that's a very legitimate question. And listen, if the homosexual community was being honest, I mean the radical homos, they would tell you that the government has no business denying a marriage license to anyone who wants one, so long as it is based on what they consider sexual preferences. And that's the point. They're trying to make marriage all about sex. And while God has certainly proscribed against sex outside of marriage, that is a religious question that does not involve the state. Okay? The state's interest in this is to protect that biological bond between parents and children and to secure the integrity of the family unit defined biologically that serves as the cornerstone of society, and also whether they should be compelled to redefine their laws regarding marriage simply because some homosexuals demand it. And the point is, what are they going to do when the next group demands it? And so on. And so what are we going to be required finally to say marriage between a man and his dog or a woman and her pig is included in marriage? And then will they argue that they should be able to file jointly with their dog or their pig? I mean, this is just, it's just absurd. Pursuing this line of thought further, Alito asked about other types of couples. How about siblings, he asked. Is there any reason why the law should treat the two groups differently? Anyway, Anderson observed, because the Supreme Court cut the democratic process short on abortion, there is no issue less settled in American public life than abortion. Our politics on abortion are so polarized because the court didn't allow the democratic process to work. And I agree with that. If the court tries to settle this itself, Anderson said, it'll simply launch a culture war like it did in Roe. Amen. I'll be addressing this Sunday night, 6 p.m. See you there. I have lit the lamps in the church belfry arch, and now you let me know if you see that they are on. Call 1-888-770-8000. That's 1-888-770-8000. And say lights on if you agree, lights off if you disagree. Or go to thebrainmassageshow.com. That's thebrainmassageshow.com. And you'll see a place there to write me an email. Please call and give me a piece of your mind to chew on. I've certainly laid down a chunk of mine for you to choke on. God bless you, my dear friends, and God save America, and I'll see you in church.